So, if we're not going to do things that are legalistic, that are of no value in restraining the flesh, don't eat, don't taste, don't touch, don't do this, don't go after self-medicating things to try to make yourself feel better, to try to make yourself self-help, all the self stuff you could do, be it in the food category, be it in the self-punishment category, be it in the not doing this category, being in the abstaining from that category, all the principles of this world that make religion religion, man trying to please God, man trying to justify himself, man trying to do something to make himself better than he is. So we're saying Christ is the end of all these things, even all of them, even without exception. Christ is the end of all these things, as Rob said, the seismic shift, the sledgehammers come down. Jesus Christ, and He alone is our salvation. He alone is our sanctification. All these things, there are no use in restraining the flesh. What do we do? What do we do? Well, that's chapter 3. That's the subject we're going to talk about now. In Colossians, it's chapter 3. In Romans, it's chapter 6. And then the practical application comes in chapter 12. So there's many different ways that Paul presents this. But in Colossians, it's chapter 3. And that reminds me of a story. Story of a man who really wanted to lose some weight. He needed to lose weight. He was having medical difficulties because he was overweight. And it was serious. The problem is, this man loved chocolate eclairs. He had this thing for chocolate eclairs and a few other things along those lines. And he liked his chocolate eclairs nice and cold. You know, so he kept them in the fridge, so when he ate them, they were fresh and cold, and he liked to savor that chocolate and that inside stuff. So he kept them in his fridge. So he said, you know what, I have to stop eating these 15 or so chocolate eclairs a day. And I need to eat good food, healthy food, I need to exercise, or else I'm going to kill myself. So he had a great idea. He took his fridge and he emptied it out. He threw everything away except for the chocolate eclairs. And he thought, you know, I'm going to buy a little fridge. And he got a little refrigerator, and he put those eclairs in the smaller refrigerator. And I know what you're thinking. And he thought the same thing. He said, that's crazy. But he had another idea of that, too. He got a padlock, and he locked his little fridge. He padlocked it. He got an accountability partner. He got two keys. He gave one key to the accountability partner. And he padlocked those chocolate eclairs, locked them away, filled his big fridge with all this good food, like lettuce and cucumbers and beans and meat, all that stuff, right? And he wrote a schedule, and he scheduled it out, and he had exercise, and as he ate better, he actually felt better. It's like, well, this is actually better. I'm actually feeling better. I have more energy. And that lasted a few days. But he had an accountability partner. So he counted as, you have the key? Yeah, his friend had the accountability partner. He had the key. But then a couple more days came and he just was like, had it. Like, I need some chocolate eclairs. And he said, no, I can't. So he filled up on some lettuce and some tuna. And he went to bed, and about somewhere in the middle of the night, his stomach was growling, and he threw it all off, lost all restraint, got the key, opened up the lock, ate his chocolate eclairs, and boy, he felt good for a moment. And the cycle continued. What's the answer to this guy's problem? He didn't get rid of the chocolate eclairs. Yeah.
No self-control.
Yeah. He needed to throw out the chocolate eclairs. He was playing with it. Maybe at some point he'd have the self-control. But at this point, he didn't have the self-control to keep them there. And he had no need for them. He was hanging on to that. That's what Colossians 3 teaches us. Turn with me to Colossians chapter 3. And we're going to see how when you have Jesus, when you have the gospel of Jesus Christ will lead you into sanctification. The gospel of Jesus Christ will lead you into holiness, into right living. So let's see how that happens. Colossians chapter 3, verse 1. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. So we see the first thing that Paul affirms is a historic reality. And that historic reality is the gospel. If then you were raised with Christ. That is, if you're raised with Christ, you will seek the things that are above. That's a historic truth. In Greek, it's A with the indicative, as Mark was alluding to earlier. That means this is a reality. So it is a reality that you were raised with Christ. So if these things are true in chapters 1 and 2, and you're praying God's will and being filled up with His wisdom, now what needs to happen is the affirmation of this reality that you are raised with Christ. And if you're raised with Christ, and it's important here to note that this is the plural, in the King James it would be ye. If then ye were raised, English doesn't make that connection now, but it's plural. So he's speaking to the church. If you, church, were raised with Christ, if this is a reality, it's A in the indicative, and it is, then there's a correspondence to that. Here we go. Hang on to your seats. This is how you follow Jesus. This is how the gospel brings you into life. This is how the gospel brings you into holiness. If you are raised with Christ, that is, if you believe the gospel, you're joined with Him with faith, then this is what happens is you seek those things which are above. There's the imperative. So the imperative comes from the indicative. What's the indicative? If this is a reality, then this imperative becomes, well, it becomes imperative. It becomes the command by which you live by. If you've been raised with Christ, if that seismic wave has, that tidal wave has come upon you, you've been born again. You believe the gospel. You have a different center of gravity. You have a different Lord. You have a different master. You know Jesus. And if you know Jesus, then this imperative all of a sudden makes sense. You seek those things which are above. Seek those things which are above. This is every believer's primary responsibility, to seek God. This is what faith empowers you to do. Now, it's a volitional choice. You have to choose it. It's an imperative. I will do this. But if the reality of if it's a reality, then that reality of the gospel translates into a purposeful seeking those things which are above. And when you seek Him, you will find Him when you seek Him with all your heart. What does it mean to seek? Yeah. Search out, pursue, look for. We know what that activity means, don't we? Seek those things which are above. That is, where Christ did, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Seek the will of God. Seek the face of God. Seek the rule and reign of Christ, where He is seated at the right hand of God. Finished full atonement. His sovereignty. His authority. His love. Then Paul comes back around to it. Set your mind on things above, not on things that are upon the earth. So set your mind on things above. The mind is what you think about, right? Set your mind, set your affections on God. Set your mind on things above. And then he makes a contrast. Set your mind on things above, not on things that are on the earth. You say, well, what do you mean not on things that are upon the earth. It's an interpretive issue. We are to interpret the issues on the earth from a heavenly perspective. That doesn't mean you just sit and think about theology, although you should think about theology. It doesn't mean you just have your head in the clouds and not your feet on the earth. What it is you have your head on the things above, so that as your feet are on the earth, you're walking out the will of God on earth. That's what makes life such a stretching experience. Because we're calling heaven's will on earth. So our mind is on things above, but our feet are on the earth. So as we go through the earth, we interpret the things of this earth from the heavenly perspective. See that? And that right there will save you a lot of money and a lot of time. You don't have to go build a monastery to get out of this world. No, we're to live in the world, but we're to be in the world, but not of the world. We don't create an alternative universe. We live in this world, but we live in this world from the perspective of where our heart is, where our mind is. And our heart and our mind, because of the gospel, is on things above, not on things that are upon the earth. See the contrast there. That's the contrast. Now, the contrast is going to be developed in this chapter 3, these 17 verses. But when you think about that dynamic, you see how important it is to understand why Paul begins this epistle with prayer. Oh, I don't cease to pray about this. This is a big deal. That's why Paul says, I don't cease to pray and ask me to be filled with the knowledge of his will, in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, bearing fruit in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God. As I look at the issues on earth, I'm to call heaven's will upon them in my own life, in my own thinking, in my own mind. I need to be praying that 24/7. I don't cease to pray about this. This is how Jesus changes everything while you're still here sitting, while you're still walking, while you're still married, while you're still working your same job. Jesus changes everything while you're doing the same thing. So in one sense, when you get saved, everything changes, and in another sense, nothing changes. The day you get saved, does your life automatically, God zaps you out of earth and He puts you in a different planet? No, you're in the same skin, you're in the same house, you're in the same family, so in that sense, nothing changes. But in another sense, everything just changed. Because I am now connected to God, where I was only connected to the earth. I'm connected to God and His perspective and His priorities and His will. And because I have been raised with Christ, if you're raised with Him, when He died, my sin was on Him. When He rose again, I came up out of the grave with Him to walk now in the victory of the newness of life. Now that's what I seek. It's the logical connection of the gospel. It's the necessary connection between justification and sanctification. Distinct, yes, but always together. Justification always produces sanctification. This is the number one theological issue in my life. This is the most controversial issue that I discuss in my lifetime. I have more discussions on this than anything else. And I get more accusations of being a legalist on this issue than anything in my life. Every year, several people will come to me and say, "You're a legalist, Jason." Do you ever hear me talk about justification and sanctification? That's what this means. Now, if you can say, "Well, I don't have to follow that imperative." And you don't. But if you don't follow that imperative, that's a sin. Does that bother you? And if you say yes, then I say, that's my point. If you say no, I say, you need to make another assessment of the reality. If I've been raised with Christ. Right? If I'm raised with Christ. Brothers, if we're raised with Christ, what do we want to do? We want to please God. Right? If you don't want to please God, then we got to talk about justification, not sanctification. And that's where the conversation needs to go. The conversation needs to go off of why you're a legalist to why don't you understand that the gospel produces obedience. See, that's a more honest discussion. I believe the gospel produces obedience. Do I believe it produces it instantaneously? Nope. Do I believe it produces it perfectly? Not at all. Is it a process? All lifelong? Yes. But when you believe the gospel produces something. And that's what Paul teaches, that's what this passage teaches. Now, what does it teach? It's going to be different. It's going to be different in everyone's life, but it's all going to be the same. It's all going to look like Jesus. It's all going to look like Jesus. Doesn't look like the devil. Okay? It's going to look like Jesus. And grace leads you to Christ. What does grace lead you to? Grace leads you to Christ. Cheap grace leads you nowhere. Okay? Cheap grace leads you nowhere. Grace that you don't really believe leads you nowhere. I get that. Okay? Those are different. That's not, Paul says, may it never be. Don't go there. That's why this is an imperative. An imperative believes, an imperative means it must happen. It must happen. That means it's the force of God on a Christian's life to say that you must be sanctified. And that's where it gets a little uncomfortable. Right? You mean I can't say I'm a Christian and continue to live in unrepentant sin? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's the judge of that? God. Who does God put on earth to walk that out? The church. We're all accountable. Brothers who love each other. And we're to stir one another up to love and good works, right? If this is a reality in your life, then, imperative, seek the things that are above. You're going to set your mind on there. You're going to think about these things. Contrast, not on things that are on the earth. Does that mean I'm just going to go build a monastery? No. It means I'm going to look at life from a biblical perspective. Not from the earthly perspective that I've been accustomed to. What is that earthly... Wait, I'm not ready. I'm not there yet. What is that earthly perspective? We'll get there. Right now, it's verse 3. He gives a reason. There's an explanation for this. Verse 3. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. So he uses the word death and hidden. So in the gospel, we understand that we are co-crucified and we are co-risen with Christ. That's why all the benefits of His work on the cross can be given to us, because we literally, through the working of God, put our sin on Him. His sin, our sin that He died for, was our sin. So when He died, He paid the penalty for our sin. So when He died, we die. So we can die to sin and live to God, because when we died, He died in our place, that when He rose again, we could live in the newness of life in Christ. For you died, this is you all, this is the church, for you died. And as a result of that death that cannot be seen, it produces something, and it's called the hidden life. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. It's hidden in that the world cannot see it. It's hidden in that it's secure. And it's hidden in that it is a reality. But one day it will be evident to all. So when the gospel is first believed, it's not immediately known to all. It's not immediately made. Now, Rob talked about it being a spectacle. Sorry, Rob, I just almost confused you with the Apostle Paul. It will be a spectacle, right? And that's in time, in God's time. But when you first come to Christ and as you walk out Christ, there's a lot of the Christian life that's hidden. Why are you doing that? Why aren't you doing the things you used to do? Why aren't you going to the places you used to do? Why are you going with this church and worshiping there? What are you doing? The world doesn't understand, because it's the hidden life. For you died with Christ, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Now, one day, the hidden life will become evident to all. There will be a completely realized eschatology. In your life, in the life of the church, for time, and throughout all eternity.